This is the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we honor the year in music for 2000, along with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2000. We also look at the case for putting Bjork into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Plus, our spotlight Hall of Fame is the ARIA Hall of Fame in Melbourne, Australia. Before we get going with the podcast, like everyone tells you, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you'll know when these podcast episodes drop, which is usually every Thursday. Now, on to this week's episode. The year was 2000. It was the year that the world survived the Y2K bug that was supposed to shut down all of the computers at midnight on New Year's Eve, once the year hit 00 with everyone's computers. In music, nu metal and the boy band craze took hold as groups like Limp Bizkit, Papa Roach, and Kid Rock were all sharing space with NSYNC, whose second album, No Strings Attached, moved them to superstardom status. Britney Spears also hit superstardom status with her Oops, I Did It Again tour. Metallica sued Napster. Napster then became a subscription-based service. Napster would eventually shut down in 2001. 28 states sued record companies for price fixing on CDs. Prince changed his name back to Prince from the symbol that he was using in a contract dispute with his record label, Warner Brothers. And 9 people died when an audience rushed the stage during a Pearl Jam concert at a festival in Denmark. Groups that were formed in 2000 included Above and Beyond, the Zac Brown Band, Crash Diet, Fusebox, Los Lonely Boys, O-Town, and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. Groups that either called it quits in 2000 before, of course, their inevitable reunions, or announced their hiatus included the Spice Girls, Luscious Jackson, Candlebox, Rage Against the Machine, Fish, The Posies, Letters to Cleo, Primus, Skunk Anansie, The Smashing Pumpkins, Color Me Bad, All Saints, and Ben Folds 5. Most of those groups actually reformed later on in one form or another. Meanwhile, the group The Presidents of the United States reformed in the year 2000. Eminem had one of the biggest selling albums of 2000 with the Marshall Mathers LP. Other artists who had big albums that year included the Backstreet Boys, Britney Spears, Creed, Nelly, Dr. Dre, Destiny's Child, Santana, Coldplay, NSYNC, Linkin Park, Limp Bizkit, Westlife, Enya, The Coors, Shaggy, along with greatest hits albums from Whitney Houston, Queen, and The Beatles. Radiohead also released their classic album Kid A that year. Breathe by Faith Hill was one of the biggest songs of the year, followed by Santana's Smooth and also his song Maria Maria, Joe's I Wanna Know, Vertical Horizon's Everything You Want, Destiny Child's Say My Name, Savage Garden's I Knew I Loved You, Lone Star's Amazed, Bon Jovi's It's My Life, Matchbox 20's Bent, Madonna's Music, and Toni Braxton's He Wasn't Man Enough. In country music, Garth Brooks announced that he was done touring. That lasted for almost 20 years, actually, until his kids were old enough to not need him around as much, or they booted him out of the house, whichever story you go with. Meanwhile, Rural America TV network RFD-TV started, which had mainly agricultural shows, but also had a lot of country music shows on it. Country music star and future Eagles band member Vince Gill, along with Christian pop music crossover superstar Amy Grant, both got married to each other, no less. Big albums for the year included Alan Jackson's When Somebody Loves You, Leanne Womack's I Hope You Dance, Joe DeMasina's Burn, 2 greatest hits albums from George Strait, 1 greatest hits album from Kenny Chesney, 1 greatest hits album from Tim McGraw, the Coyote Ugly soundtrack, and the Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack. Big singles for country included Faith Hill's Breathe and also The Way You Love Me, Tim McGraw's My Best Friend and also My Next 30 Years, Leanne Womack's I Hope You Dance, Kenny Rogers' Buy Me a Rose, Lone Star's What About Now, Aaron Tippin's Kiss This, John Michael Montgomery's The Little Girl, The Dixie Chicks, now known as The Chicks, with their song Cowboy Take Me Away, Travis Tritt's Best of Intentions, and Alan Jackson's It Must Be Love. In hip-hop, the biggest albums were Eminem's The Marshall Mathers LP, Jay-Z's The Dynasty, Rock La Familia, Outkast's Stankonia, Snoop Dogg's The Last Meal, Mystical's Let's Get Ready, The Wu-Tang Clan's The Wu, Ja Rule's Rule 336, Nelly's Country Grammar, Jurassic 5's Quality Control, Exhibit's Restless, and the Ride or Die Volume 2 compilation. The biggest hip-hop singles included Eminem's The Real Slim Shady, Missy Elliott's Hot Boys, Nelly's Country Grammar, Jay-Z's I Just Wanna Love You, and also his song Big Pimpin', Dr. Dre's The Next Episode, and also Forget About Dre, and Ice Cube's You Can Do It. In dance music, there were big albums like Paul Van Dyke's Out There and Back, Tiesto Presents Magic 6 Live in Amsterdam, Moby's Play, Fatboy Slim's Halfway Between the Gutter and the Stars, Nightmare on Wax's DJ Kicks, William Orbit's Pieces in a Modern Style, and Madonna's Music. There were two iconic songs that were released, mainly because of the fact that they still get played in sports stadiums worldwide to this very day. Darude's Sandstorm and Daft Punk's One More Time. Other songs for the year included Underworld's Cowgirl, Mojo's Lady Hear Me Tonight, A Touch of Class's All Around the World, Sonique's Sky, Moby's Natural Blues, Fatboy Slim's Weapon of Choice, and also Star 69, Angelic's It's My Turn, and The Prodigy's Baby's Got a Temper. The top 10 DJs of the year, according to DJ Mag's annual Top 100 DJs poll, were Sasha, Paul Oakenfold, John Digweed, Paul Van Dyke, Carl Cox, Judge Jules, Danny Tenaglia, Fergie, Lisa Lashes, and Danny Howells. In Latin music, the biggest artists of the year included Marc Anthony, Son of Four, Gloria Estefan, Carlos Vives, Christina Aguilera, A.B. Quintanilla y Los Cumbia Kings, Shakira, Enrique Iglesias, Ibrahim Ferrer, Gilberto Santa Rosa, Joan Sebastian, Los Angeles Azules, Los Temerarios, Banda El Recodo, and Ricardo Onjonio. Broadway musicals or revivals that opened in 2000 included Aida, The Dead, The Full Monty, Jane Eyre, The Music Man, and Seussical, The Musical. Musical films and documentaries that were released in 2000 included Almost Famous, Dancer in the Dark, Darling, Darling, The Filth and the Fury, Songcatcher, Help, I'm a Fish, The Road to El Dorado, The Tigger Movie, The Fantastics, and Turn It Up. Artists who were born in 2000 included rappers 24 Golden, Digga D, Lil Pump, and Young Lyric, along with singers Gabby Barrett, Willow Smith, Baby Ariel, Halle Bailey of Chloe and Halle, singer-songwriter Biba Doobie, reggae singer Coffee, Surf Mesa, Hatchin and Yang Yang of NCT, producer Nick Mira, and Noah Cyrus. Artists who unfortunately passed away in 2000 included singers Ofra Haza, Ian Dury, Kirstie McCall, Nazia Hassan, and Johnny Taylor, along with rappers Big Pun and Joe C, country music singer Jimmy Davis, pianist Victor Borga, Benjamin Orr of The Cars, DJ Screw, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, Tito Puente, Dennis Danel of Social Distortion, saxophonist Stanley Turrentine, pop staples of the Staple Singers, and composer Jack Nitzsche. In award ceremonies for the music of 2000, Steely Dan won Album of the Year at the Grammy Awards for Two Against Nature. U2 won Record and Song of the Year for Beautiful Day, and Shelby Lynn won Best New Artist. Eminem's video for the song The Real Slim Shady won Video of the Year at the MTV Video Music Awards. During the ceremony, by the way, Rage Against the Machine's Tim Comerford climbed the scaffolding on the stage during Limp Bizkit's performance for whatever reason no one knows to this very day. At the American Music Awards, Toni Braxton, Creed, The Backstreet Boys, Dr. Dre, Faith Hill, and Enrique Iglesias were the big winners. At the Billboard Music Awards, Destiny's Child won Artist of the Year. Destiny's Child and Jay-Z won Entertainers of the Year at the Soul Train Music Awards, making it one of the rare times that there was actually a tie for Entertainer of the Year. Faith Hill, Garth Brooks, and NSYNC won the music categories at the People's Choice Awards. At the Eurovision Singing Contest, which was held that year in Sweden, the Olsen Brothers from Denmark won for the song Fly on the Wings of Love. The Dixie Chicks, now known as the Chicks, won Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards, while Shania Twain won Entertainer of the Year at the Academy of Country Music Awards. Coldplay won Best British Album for Parachutes, and Robbie Williams won Best Song for Rock DJ at the Brit Awards. The Bare Naked Ladies won Best Album for Maroon, while Nelly Furtado won Best Song for I'm Like a Bird at the Juno Awards. Killing Heidi won Album of the Year for Reflector, and Madison Avenue won Single of the Year for Don't Call Me Baby at the ARIA Music Awards. At the Tony Awards, Contact won Best Musical and Kiss Me Kate won Best Revival of a Musical. The Pulitzer Prize for Music was won by Lewis Straplin for Life is a Dream, Opera in Three Acts, Act Two, Concert Version. Musically, at the Academy Awards, Bob Dylan won Best Song for Things Have Changed from the movie Wonder Boys, and Tan Dunn won Best Original Score for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Badly Drawn Boy won the Mercury Music Prize for the album The Hour of Bewilderbeast. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony took place on March 6th at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City that year. At the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony, the Sidemen category was introduced for the very first time. The category was given to honor, quote, the musicians who were out of the spotlight who performed as backup musicians for major musicians, either in recording sessions or in concert, end quote. Drummer Hal Blaine, saxophonist King Curtis, bass guitarist James Jamerson, guitarist Scotty Moore, and drummer Earl Palmer were the first inductees for that category. The category was discontinued after 2009 emerged into the Award for Musical Excellence category. Meanwhile, legendary record executive Clive Davis was inducted into the non-performers category. Nat King Cole and Billie Holiday were inducted into the early influencers category. And in the performers category, the Hall inducted Eric Clapton, Earth, Wind & Fire, The Lovin' Spoonful, Bonnie Raitt, James Taylor, and this next group. The group The Moonglows made their name in the very beginnings of the early rock and roll era of the 1950s, before artists like Elvis Presley, Fats Domino, and Chuck Berry gave rock its swagger. The group started out as the duo of Louisville, Kentucky friends Harvey Fuqua and Bobby Lester, who got together in 1949 after they both got out of the United States Army. A couple of years later, Harvey decided to move to Cleveland, Ohio, where he started the group The Crazy Sounds with Danny Coggins and Prentice Barnes. Later in that year, Bobby himself would move to Cleveland and ended up joining The Crazy Sounds with Harvey. The next year, in 1952, The Crazy Sounds auditioned at a club in Cleveland for a slot on the club's lineup. The club owners knew a local radio DJ at the time who was making a name for himself, future Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Alan Freed. The club owners got Alan to listen to the crazy sounds, and then once Alan did, he became the group's manager. The first thing that Alan did as manager was to change the name of the group from the Crazy Sounds to the Moonglows. The next thing that he did was to sign them to his record label, Champagne. The group wasn't successful at first, and Danny ended up leaving the group. So they replaced Danny with Alexander Walton, who went by the name Peter Graves. The Moonglows started recording for the Chance record label, but those recordings didn't pan out too well on the charts either. And then fate changed things. In 1953, Alan Freed started a radio show on WINS Radio in New York City. The show was extremely popular, but what that meant for the Moonglows was that they ended up gaining exposure on the show, which led to the group getting a record contract with Chess Records, and it was at Chess Records that the group hit pay dirt. The first song of theirs that Chess released was Sincerely in 1954 for the Rock, Rock, Rock movie soundtrack. The song shot up to number one on the R&B charts, and a more watered-down version of the song became a big hit for the group the McGuire Sisters. Sincerely was followed up by Most of All and We Go Together, which also became hits. There were some other shifts with various members going in and out of the group. However, when Billy Johnson joined the group in 1955, which added a guitarist to the vocal group, the lineup that is considered the classic lineup of the group became Bobby Lester, Harvey Fuqua, Billy Johnson, Pete Graves, and Prentice Barnes. During the group's initial run from 1953 to 1958, the Moonglows had 7 songs hit the top 15 on the R&B charts. Sincerely, Most of All, We Go Together, When I'm With You, Seesaw, Please Send Me Someone to Love, and The 10 Commandments of Love. 4 of those songs hit the top 40 on the pop charts, although the highest to chart on the pop chart was Sincerely, which actually only topped out at number 20. After finishing their recording contract in late 1958, the group went their separate ways, with Harvey Fuqua having the most success. In fact, it was actually Harvey who helped to discover another future Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Marvin Gaye. Harvey took Marvin's group at the time, the Marquise, brought in Chuck Barksdale from the group The Dells, and renamed the group Harvey and the New Moonglows. That version of the Moonglows recorded until late 1960, when Marvin went to Detroit, Michigan and started working for the Motown record label. Harvey soon followed Marvin to Detroit and worked with Motown during the label's heyday in the 1960s. Fuqua and Lester separately got other versions of the Moonglows together over the next couple of decades, going through at least 20 different group members collectively. Variations of the group toured here and there for a few years at a time, until each classic lineup member passed away, mainly from cancer. Fuqua was the last one of the classic lineup to pass away in 2010. Inducted into the Hall by Paul Simon of Class of 1990 inductees, Simon and Garfunkel, and also in 2001 as a solo artist, Harvey Fuqua, Bobby Lester, Peter Graves, Prentice Barnes, and Billy Johnson. The Moonglows, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Class of 2000, and we have a selection of their music on our podcast playlist, the link of which is in the show notes. Before we go any further, we'd like to tell you about our other podcast, the Music History Today podcast, where we go over the events, music releases, births, and passings for that day in music history. The Music History Today podcast drops each and every day, including on the weekends, on this channel, the Music History Today Network, and also on our Music History Today Network YouTube page. Now, back to the Music Halls of Fame podcast. Mm-hmm. This week, we look at the case for putting Icelandic goddess and also former lead singer of the group The Sugar Cubes, Björk, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. As always, to the tail of the tape we go. Björk has released 11 studio albums, 2 soundtrack albums, 1 compilation album, 6 remix albums, 7 live albums, and 4 box sets. Of those, 7 have gone top 40 in America, with 2007's album Volta going to number 9. In the UK, she's had all but one of her studio albums get to the top 25, with 6 of them going top 10. The highest charting one was actually 1995's Post, which hit number 2 and sold 3 million copies worldwide. Her biggest selling album to date, though, is 1993's debut, which sold almost 5 million copies worldwide. As far as singles go, Björk's released 41 of those. Of those, 2 hit the top 90 in America. 1993's Big Time Sensuality, which hit number 88, and 2007's Earth Intruders, which hit number 84. Do note that her most famous song, 1995's Army of Me, never made it big in America. In fact, it didn't even chart, which just goes to show you about how sometimes your best-known songs aren't necessarily your biggest-selling ones. Army of Me was one of 3 top 10 singles that she had to go along with 20 top 40 singles in the UK, however, including It's So Quiet, which hit number 4, and Hyper Ballad, which hit number 8, both of those from her album Post. What makes Björk so Hall of Fame ready is that she is a critical darling and extremely influential for her bold style. She's dabbled in avant-garde, electronic, pop, trip-hop, jazz, industrial, folk, and even classical music. She's been nominated for 16 Grammy Awards, winning none of them so far. She's been nominated for 11 Brit Awards, winning 5 of those. She's been nominated for 19 MTV Video Music Awards, winning 4 of those. Rolling Stone magazine named her the 64th greatest singer of all time and the 81st greatest singer-songwriter of all time. She has a 3-octave vocal range, and she uses every single last drop of it. Her style has influenced just about every avant-garde artist out there, including Lorde. Plus, who can forget her infamous swan dress at the 2001 Academy Awards? With that kind of resume and influence, why hasn't Björk gotten in? Well, maybe a lot of voters probably find her style a little too strange, by their standards at least. That really shouldn't matter, though. What should matter is both the quality of the music and also the respect for the artist. And Björk has a boatload of both. Björk should be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and hopefully in the next class. Unless, of course, people are still holding that swan dress against her. But to prove my point, we have included selections of her music on our podcast playlist, the link to which, of course, as I said earlier, is in the show notes. The Arts Centre of Melbourne is a performing arts complex in the Melbourne Arts Precinct in Southbank, which is a suburb of Melbourne in Victoria, Australia. The centre was constructed starting in 1973 and completed in 1984 when it fully opened. The centre has a bunch of theatres and galleries and is noted for having not only the usual highbrow concerts and ballets from classical and jazz artists, but also for having roller skating, a circus, and a movie theater. In the complex lies an exhibit for the ARIA Hall of Fame. ARIA, or Australian Recording Industry Association, is the Australian lobbying group for their music industry. They also put on the ARIA Music Awards, which is their version of the Grammy Awards. They also induct people into their Music Hall of Fame, simply called the ARIA Hall of Fame, because sometimes, you know what? A simple name is just a good name. The induction started in 1988 and have been going on ever since, except for 2000 when no one was inducted. The number of annual inductees varies. For the last few years, only one act per year has been inducted. Go to artcentremelbourne.com.au for information on when the organization does their yearly exhibit and what times the operations are. And, of course, we will put that link in the show notes for you. The group Men at Work was formed in 1978 by bass guitarist Ron Streichert and lead singer Colin Hay when they got together as an acoustic duo. They expanded the group to include drummer Jerry Spicer in mid-1979 and keyboardist Greg Snedden. Snedden left the group and was replaced by multi-instrumentalist Greg Hamm, who joined only after he finished up his college degree in music at the time. Hamm's friend, bassist John Reese, joined with Hamm in the group, and when Reese joined, Streichert moved from bass guitar to lead guitar. Colin Hay came up with the band's name off the top of his head one night when the band had to use a name in order to play a gig at the Cricketers Arms Hotel in Melbourne. The group was signed to Columbia Records after they had financed their own independent single, Key Punch Operator, which had a famous B-side, which we'll get to more in depth in a few minutes. After the group had built up their reputation and fan base as the biggest unsigned band in Melbourne, the group was signed to Columbia Records. They recorded their debut album from March to September of 1981 at Richmond Recorders in Melbourne, and on November 9th, 1981, the group put out that album. Business as Usual was the name of it. It was released on that date in Australia only. Their first single, released internationally, was Who Can It Be Now? That single raced up the charts, hitting number 2. They then followed that one up with Down Under, which spent 6 weeks at number 1. Finally, in June of 1982, the album Business as Usual was released in the United States. A tour as opening act for Fleetwood Mac soon followed as their popularity grew. Another song from the album, Be Good Johnny, didn't do as well, but the Business as Usual album itself went to number 1 in America and stayed there for 15 weeks. The album also earned Men at Work a Best New Artist Grammy Award, which was their one and only Grammy nomination and win back in 1983. The group also received a Crystal Globe Award in 1983 from Columbia Records for making $100 million in business. And by making $100 million of business, I think that meant making the record label $100 million in business, but I'm sure the group at least got a small cut of that. At least I hope so. What helped the group become such a huge hit in the 1980s was the fact that MTV had just started taking hold in America in the early 1980s. And the channel also needed music videos to fill their slots, and Men at Work was actually one of only a few music artists at the time who made music videos. So their videos went into a heavy rotation, and the band became big and ended up being synonymous with new wave music. Even though they had nothing to do with New Wave, they just happened to get popular at the same time as New Wave, that's all. The band's next album was Cargo, which was recorded throughout 1982 between studios in Melbourne and also Los Angeles, California. It was released on April 29th, 1983, and ended up at number 3 on the Billboard Albums chart. That album had the hits Overkill, which topped out at number 3, Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive, which peaked at number 28, and their anti-war song It's a Mistake, which made it to number 6. After some time off, the band got back together in 1984 to record their third album, Two Hearts. By then, though, the writing was on the wall as the band was beginning to fray. After years of infighting between Colin Hay and Jerry Spicer, Reese and Spicer were forced out of the band. Session musicians filled their place, but when Two Hearts was released on April 23, 1985, the album tanked and the group broke up in 1987. The band tried a mini reunion with different musicians going in and out of the lineup, with Hay and Ham sticking around until Ham finally left after the group played at the closing ceremonies for the Sydney Summer Olympics. In 2009, the Australian TV music quiz show Spicks and Specks asked the question as to whether Men at Work's song Down Under sounded familiar to another song, Marion Sinclair's 1932 song Kookaburra, which got the attention of Larrikin Music Publishing, which owned the publishing rights to Kookaburra. More importantly, it also got the attention of the label's lawyers, who promptly filed a copyright lawsuit against Men at Work. In 2010, Men at Work lost the copyright lawsuit over Down Under, specifically over the flute solo in the song, which the court ruled was way too similar to Kookaburra. Larrikin Music Publishing won 5% of past and future royalties to the version of Down Under that has the flute solo, in other words, the version that gets played almost every hour on all of the classic 80s radio and streaming stations, which means that they're making a boatload of money right now. Greg Hamm played the solo and had added the solo during the recording of the song in 1980, when the song was the B-side to their independent debut single Key Punch Operator. And now you know what that famous B-side was that I was talking about earlier. Greg unfortunately felt responsible for the band losing the lawsuit, and more importantly, for losing 5% of their royalties to a really popular song. And that led to Greg having anxiety and depression, and eventually a heart attack, which took his life early at the age of 58 on April 19th, 2012. Hay started another version of Men at Work in 2019 with no other original members of the group. In 2021, Lude of the EDM duo Chumba did a drum and bass version of Down Under, with Colin Hay re-recording his vocals. The new version, which is credited as Lude featuring Colin Hay, ended up back on the charts, this time on the European dance charts, bringing the song to a whole new generation. That is good to see, considering how the original group broke up and the heartache the lawsuit brought upon the band. The new version of Men at Work is Colin Hay on lead vocals and guitar, drummer Jimmy Branley, San Miguel Perez on guitar, Yosmel Montejo on bass, Sheila Gonzalez on saxophone and flute, and Cecilia Noel on backup vocals. Post-COVID, they're back out touring, and to this day, Men at Work are considered one of the biggest Australian acts of all time. The group Men at Work, inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame in Melbourne, Australia in 1994. And of course, we put a selection of their greatest hits on our podcast playlist. The link, as I have said already a couple of times, is in the show notes. The Music Halls of Fame podcast is part of the Music History Today network, which can be found under Music History Today on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and also on our YouTube page under Music History Today. Thank you very much for listening.